Hello everyone and welcome to JFG tonight for an Ask Me Anything. It was so fun last week, the Ask Me Anything, with everyone calling with their dating problems, and they were not big problems. The problems were the people calling. Those people had girlfriends and they were just blocked at the idea of, yeah, keep your current girlfriend and make babies with her. It's like, oh, JF, is it okay if she's Asian? Yeah, it's okay. In any case, I don't know if we're going to get dating advice calls, but if you would like to call me tonight, join the Discord server at discord.jfg.world and enter the waiting room. And once you are in the waiting room, whenever I finish a subject or I finish another caller, I can move you in the JF lounge. Now be prepared to pause your Odyssey video so you can hear me from inside the Discord room rather than hear me in double. Puzim says, bonsoir JF, hello chat. Michael had written to me, I had answered, you'll remember a couple of days ago, maybe yesterday or was it 2 days ago? He was talking about democracy and the slowness of democracy and how ultimately maybe it's better to have dictatorship. And I was pointing out that the problems of democracy can be resolved by having the smallest possible democracy. If our governments were just scheduling the trash collection, they wouldn't have so much power over us. And so ultimately the problem is not that democracy exists, it is the extent that was left in terms of power over our lives to the government. So big government is the problem, not so much the way it is managed, although democracy has intrinsic weaknesses. If you keep it at bay, if you keep it small, these weaknesses will not hurt you very much. He wrote again in answer to my response. He said, by the way, hey JF, thanks for commenting yesterday. I'm also glad I was able to extend the show a bit more. By the way, I agree with you and share your worldview, but I'm getting fed up with losing ground to the left, and our system has been hijacked by big tech, MSM, and liberals. They control everything now. They want power, and we just want to be left alone, and we're losing ground little by little. Have you heard of the coalition Libs and NPD? That's the leftist in Canada. They've even stopped pretending disagreeing. We now have two prime ministers, Jagmeet and Trudeau. Yes, it's true that the far left has pretty much teamed up with the liberals, and basically we seem to have a minority government, but in reality we have a majority oppressive leftist government. He says, I guess my main point is, let's say we were living in Russia under a fascistic dictatorship. Who is more likely to be oppressed? Conservatives, right-wingers, or SJWs, leftists, or liberals? I feel my life and my family life would be better under Putin's regime, my children would be safer, and my marriage would be stronger. My enemies, SJW activists, are the ones that would be oppressed and suppressed, not us, and I would have my true safe space. I believe that, yes, utopia would be what you've described, a small democratic government with strong capitalism. But I don't think it can happen anymore. I think we need to be more fascistic / dictatorial in our approach. That's the only way we can get some power and freedom back. They're not afraid to use the Wire Act against us, freeze bank accounts, or unleash mafia-style BLM / Antifa to loot our stores. When they don't get their way, the balance of power we thought we had is over, a thing of the past. We're already living in a dictatorship. They're just good at keeping the illusion. Thanks to their actions, they've awakened the tyrant in me. My new sentiment is that I would rather live in my dictatorship than in theirs. And I answered to this, sure, it's possible. However, things aren't perfect in Russia or any dictatorship. For instance, you mentioned marriage. Divorce rate is super high in Russia, and the female is automatically designated as the main caretaker. It is close to impossible short term to fix the problems of the West, but we should not be in despair for the long term. The constitutions of various societies across time have improved on every iteration, and perhaps there is a future constitution that can protect us against the rise of leftism everywhere. We must play the game as a hawk and dove game, where the hawks are led to fight against each other, weakening each other, so that the dove strategy eventually wins. To pick tyranny against the left's tyranny is to play like a hawk, and this means going for the tit-for-tat punishment, rather than just focus on surviving until the doves can fly freely. And he answered to this, and I thought you were black-pilled. Thanks for the message of optimism. By the way, I tipped you $25 on Odyssey. I thought they would allow me to put up a message, but there was no box, so here's the message that should have come with the tip. He says, isn't it nice to have a PhD consultant freely available like JF to entertain your ideas? You have an idea about anything, send it by JF for a fresh perspective. Everybody should be leveraging that. Well, thank you so much for the support. I knew JF was a liberal deep down. Ariel Soares says, JF still has some liberal side. I mean, yes, I guess you could say this, but the word liberal has been taken over so much that basically it's improper to call this liberal. That's why I call it libertarianism. It's, yes, I am for liberty, and I think far, far into the future, like 1,000 years, 1,500 years, this is the kind of point at which I can see a country like early America to rise again. And yes, I would like this country in the future to be a place of liberty and free engagement and honest dealing. But getting there is very complicated. All right, join me on Entropy. If you don't want to join me live by speaking on the Discord, you can click on the link below to Entropy. Which side are you on? Theism, atheism, or no opinion? I would like to survey the crowd because I've been invited to a debate on atheism and theism. It's cringe. It's been done again and again, but I always say yes to debate. So there's a Muslim guy on modern day debate who wants to argue with me. His name is Nadir Ahmed. He's been facing other YouTube atheists, and he wants to make a case that the proof of God's existence. So really a classical like 2010 theism debate. Okay, I said yes. I always say yes. There's no way for me to say no to a debate because I believe so much in free engagement, and I would so much like society to go back to this kind of belief we had in 2015, 2016, that you lay out a point on the public space, people will engage with it, and there will be a fight of ideas, and then there will be the free marketplace of ideas. But now everyone is getting censored. I published my scientific theory. Scientists are not talking about it. The truth was stated about the emergence of life in 2018, and people just stopped talking about the emergence of life. Where's Richard Dawkins? Where's Lawrence Krauss? Where are you guys? Are you guys still thinking about the emergence of life, or you're just going to shut up and just because someone else found it? Come on, guys. The progression of the war is pretty stalled. I mean, there was some movement. Ukraine claims to have taken back a suburb of Kiev. What does that mean, though? You know, did they crush the Russian forces that were in there? Or is it just a case of Russian forces stepping back because they're not ready to penetrate Kiev? In any case, not much progress. But here we have a city that was claimed by Russia, and they claim to have taken full control of it right here. So some degree of advancement. Mengel says they are talking about it, just not in the way you would like. And he sends me this. Oh, well, yes. I mean, The thing is, no, they're not talking about it. Because, okay, I could take the idea that JF, we disagree with you. And here's why we disagree, and therefore we're going to go for transhumanism and eliminating free will. But the problem of these guys is that they don't. They don't consider the change of the evolutionary forces that happens when you start a phenotypic revolution. So all of these naive transhumanists who cannot formulate a sensical sentence about the revolutionary phenotype, it's all invalid. Show me you understand the revolutionary phenotype and then say, I want this. That I could respect. But I don't respect people who ignore it and say, oh, it's going to be beautiful. People are going to feel great. It's going to be great. It's going to be better. Explain me how it is better to become the sterile worker of an ant colony. Explain that to me. Is it better for the queen? Is it better for the sterile worker? Because we're about to become the sterile workers. Eraser sends $5. Thank you so much for supporting the show through the amazing support button of Odyssey. I can't believe that we're on an alternative platform and we're receiving super chats. Isn't it beautiful? Eraser says, Jeff, you need to take over Odyssey as the definitive show for serious debates. The people currently filling that role don't know how it's done, and Killstream is more about e-drama. Who knows how long Odyssey will last, but right now I see an opportunity for you to take back the debate moderator throne. There would be some fun to it, but it's harder these days, let me tell you. You're right. Nothing out there is satisfying. Look, I respect the Crucible. Extremely fair, extremely interesting subjects of debate, interesting guest. But there is something when I go to the Crucible where there is not a full intellectual engagement from the moderators. I'm not feeling Pedro. I'm not feeling Andrew. And I'm not saying this to criticize, but I'm just saying this to show you how much I agree with you, that what is out there is not satisfying. And they're not so far from it, but at the same time, they are bound by YouTube. And there's the obstacle of the YouTube rules, so they cannot talk about certain subjects. And there's also the fact that it's a disconnected kind of, you're ruled by the TOS, and you're ruled also by the shadow banning, because I'm sure that with the debaters they get on, I'm sure it attracts some amount of algorithmic manipulation. So they're stuck in a way where, in a place where they offer extreme good quality, but it's not perfect, and also it's not possible to restore a kind of massive internet interest because YouTube is playing too much with the view counts and stuff like this. So yes, Odyssey is a place where it could be reborn, and then we're not even talking about politically provoked. Politically provoked a failure of a kind of level of intelligence from the moderators. I think that a good intellectual show is one where the moderator knows more than the audience, not the other way around. I shouldn't be watching the regular chat to expect more insight than the moderator's comment. So, failure of intelligence there. And other, well, modern day debate. Again, superb place. I love getting there. But there is a problem in the... They want to be so objective and so withdrawn that ultimately James isn't giving a kind of human delivery to it all, which I would do. So that means, I mean, he's still in academia, so I'm guessing he needs to stay safe on everything he says. But the thing is, you're going to be canceled from academia just for having people like me on your show. So why don't you go at it? Well, why don't you invest yourself emotionally and deliver something human to your show? I mean, I'm not criticizing. It's his choice. But again, that indicates there is something not fulfilled in the internet offer But here's my problem. I don't know how much we can restart this. Because everyone now has their platform. Everyone wants to be their own streamer. There's much less interest at engaging in debate. We don't have leverage. So it's like people are going to lose a night to come here and there's not much gain for them. There used to be a gain, which is we're going to give you exposure to the biggest show on the internet right now. Like when you came to Warski Live, there was no question. You wanted to be on Warski Live. But with the smaller crowds and with the fact that everyone has their smaller crowd, we have a very divided internet. So in the end, you end up with second tier debaters. There's no talent in there, but it's like the top talents are running their own show and they're making their own super chat, and losing a night on their own show would mean a sacrifice both of time and money. So it's hard. And also, I'm a man who delivers only once. I never do something twice. So it's hard for me to get back in the game of scheduling three debates a week. And, you know, let's do the third time theism against atheism. I need to be fed with some kind of growth and explorative mode that I would have a hard time telling you, like, three new debate subjects that I've never done before, that I've never seen before. But that's the standard. That's what I would be looking for. Lappytop says, I'm interested in... So, yeah, I mean, we can try to restore some of it. For now, I've been exporting it, basically. I've been doing all my debates on other channels. And I do it with the hope that you guys understand, like, if you're contributing to JFG tonight, I'm also using your money to pay for my food so that I can go debate on Modern Day Debate or The Crucible. But for now, I've not been soliciting debates on here, except that Saturday we'll have Edward Dutton, so it might look like a debate. And I've also organized the debate. I don't think I should reveal it because it's not been announced, but a big guest of this show, I've organized him to go debate on The Crucible. You'll see this announced very soon, I'm sure. And I'll also go on Modern Day this week, Friday. So Friday I'll do 7 p.m. Eastern Time Modern Day Debate on theism against the Muslim guy. And then we'll do the regular show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Eraser says, Jeff, I totally agree. Like I said, you know how to do it right. It's going to be smaller. But that's the reality of the internet for now. I still think the door is wide open for you. Yeah, it's feasible. It's something I can consider. And the internet feels different, feels less opened. That is such a sad thing that happened in our lifetime, where the internet has been taken over by a bunch of low lives, unintellectual, uninteresting people. I don't know what to do in this context, bro. Just that says, Jeff, you better challenge Dutton hard wherever you disagree with him on any point. You don't do this with regular Spencer. Disagreements are laughed off with Spencer and you. Well, I don't think I avoid confrontation with Richard, but I don't know that recently, I mean, remove the vaccine stuff and COVID stuff, but I don't know that in his most recent interview there was anything in there that I strongly disagree with. So there was nothing for me to go at hard. But yeah, Edward Dutton, definitely we're going to talk about. He has a new book with a theory that he wants to present. And I want to talk about the mutation, spiteful mutant ID. Jeff, is there any chance you will invite David Duke back on the show one day? I would love to talk to him anywhere, but I don't know that he can even respect the Odyssey terms of service. And so I would be hesitant at getting him here, because respecting the Odyssey terms of service is not difficult. But David has he has his own difficulties. He is a different type of guy. He has a problem with authority, let's face it. And I don't know if I can contain him. And it would be so sad to start triggering the whole now Odyssey strikes you, Stripe removes your super chat. All of this for a man who, I mean, I'd love to talk to him anywhere. Again, I will accept any invitation anywhere to talk to him, but not here, because I'm done living with the nervousness of having people threaten my channel. Delcroix sends a super chat. He says, "A bunch of fucking ice holes, Maroney." Okay, a quote of some intellectual who was complaining. Go Away is already on Entropy. He says, "The Australian PM says he is aiming to stop the COVID test requirement for travels entering Australia, but still no talk of allowing unvaccinated to leave the country. PM is trying to win political points in the run-up to our election with the dumbass public of this cucked nation. My question is, when will international travel restrictions end for the unvaxxed?" They have successfully created their two-tier citizenship society, so they're going to be hard to give it up, especially that thing. I think they love this idea of keeping you from traveling outside the country. I think it's something that excites the tyrant for some reason. The freedom of movement is a big thing. And let's not forget the voting with your feet. You know, this expression that if things become unlivable in your society, you can always leave to another society, unless you're unvaxxed in Australia or unvaxxed in Canada, I guess. So yes, it's they're going to hang on to it for a while, but at some point it will become scientifically untenable. And by scientifically untenable, I mean they're not even going to be able to make the ridiculous excuse that they've been using. At some point, the pandemic will basically not be tracked as much as it is now, and they will realize, okay, well, since we don't have those dashboards that count the number of deaths on an everyday basis, we can't justify these policies anymore. ZDez says, "JF has always dealt with people fairly and where they are at. That, if anything, is his greatest skill." Well, thank you. And Twigs has sent a Sprocket has sent a super chat on Entropy during the night. He says, "Is my caps lock on again? I can't tell. I have dyslexia." Yes, your super chat came in all caps, suggesting that your cap locks is on, Sprocket. Remove your cap locks. Twigs Cradromale sends a super chat. He says, "I believe in microevolution, but not macroevolution. Can you show me a kind turn into another kind? Can a cat become a dog?" And that's a quote. He says, "G-Man paraphrased. Looking forward to you debate a theist again, JF." Yeah, this whole argument, a kind transforming into another kind. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you expected a response, but of course the response is, it's not because you don't see it that it didn't happen. The same way we can tell you that something collided with planet Earth, which led to the creation of the moon. But you won't see it, and we won't repeat it in the lab. There won't be a... We won't create a second moon just to prove to you that the first moon emerged that way. But there are traces left by events from the past, and there are traces left by events of reproduction that happened that divided the dogs from the tigers, from the monkeys, and from the mouse. So that's the answer. But yeah, I don't know what will be the approach of this Muslim theist, but they told me it was about God's existence. So I guess we will get some philosophical talking points around. I don't know if he's like presuppositionalist, or I know that in his other debate on modern day debate, he thinks that there is evidence of the divinity of the Quran based on the fact that the Quran was right about the fact that alcohol is bad for your health. And that's like a coin flip. It's like, if I flip a coin, the coin will be saying that alcohol is bad half of the time and that alcohol is good the other half of the time. That coin would be right 50% of the time. Is the Quran even right 50% of the time about everything that it says? I don't think so. And even if that was the case, this would just mean that there were people understanding the world more than 1,000 years ago, which is not surprising. It's not very hard to see in your everyday life without any sort of scientific knowledge that alcohol is bad for people who abuse it, you know? Stephen Robinson sends a question on entropy. He says, hey, JF, what do you think that the majority of listeners to the show are older than you or younger? Would you ask the chat to type in their age? I am 43 going on 44 this year. Okay, chat, if you would like to participate to this activity, write your age and sex in the regular chat. My age is 37 and I am a male, M. All right. I think I have a broad and large audience, but perhaps the average tends a few years younger than me. Yeah, we see a broad range. We see people in their 20s, people in their 30s, people in their 40s. We even see some in their 60s. I mean, it's a broad range. So that seems to be the range. Mariupol today. Here's the state of Mariupol after the bombardments of yesterday. The work that it's going to be to reconstruct this, it's going to be perhaps harder than to reconstruct from zero. JPM Trading Desk hints Zelensky is close to capitulation. Oh, well, that would be interesting, but I think they may be aggressively reading here. I mean, is Zelensky about to capitulate? It seems to me that he's stubborn and he's going to pursue every bit of war that he can pursue. Are we about to have a major breakthrough in the Ukraine war? Citing an AP update, Zelensky's move back from his demand that all Ukrainian territory be given back to the country. Specifically, Zelensky seems ready to cede claims on Crimea and Donbass to Russia, territories that Russia has controlled for several years. The problem is it too little too late? Because given the harsh fight that at least they think they're giving to the Russians, it seems that settling for just these requests, which had been made weeks ago by Putin, it's very sad to me. And it's I know that it's a I know that there's such a thing as the sunken cost fallacy, which is you should not care about what you've invested. You should just take the decision based on the current moment. But I fully do the sunken cost fallacy, and I endorse it. That's the way I live. So if I was Putin, I would be like, I've invested too much in this war. I now want Mariupol, the full land bridge. I want the south of Ukraine, basically, at least, even in a negotiated settlement. This graph is the scariest thing I've ever seen in terms of per data. This is the position of people regarding the whole Russia thing, based on whether they had 3 shots of the vaccine, 2 shots, or 0 shots of the vaccine. So in blue, you have what people answer when they've had 3 shots of the vaccine. Imposing tougher economic sanctions on Russia, 86%. 86% of people who got the vaccine want stronger economic sanctions on Russia. If you ask to the unvaccinated, 13%. This is the scariest thing I've ever seen, because it's totally showing you that society is converging toward truly a bisection of sheeples, like people who will just follow whatever order the main system gives you, and people who won't. It's unbelievable, because look at the strength of the relationship. This 86 versus 13 is very rare in social sciences. It's always blurry. People always have all sorts of opinions. But 86 versus 13%. When you take the vax, you also follow the... Yeah, Nighttime says NPCs are real. That is exactly what it is. This is a demonstration that the LPC meme is the truth. Seizing the assets of Russian oligarchs associated with President Putin, 85% versus 13%. Cutting off oil shipments from Russia, sending additional military equipment to Ukraine, providing additional loans and non-military aid to Ukraine, providing Ukraine with fighter jets, it's all the same. The vaccinated want that, and the unvaccinated don't want this. The only thing that differs is none of the above and don't know / no response, where the unvaccinated are numerous. Very interesting. We are surrounded by NPCs. They have taken over society, and they are creating exclusive clubs, and they want you to get kicked off planes and restaurants, and they're also a warring entity. They are at war, and they have a side. Go Away sends a super chat. He says, enthralled by his stories of wartime, Ukraine, and we're all over this guy. My question is, would finding a way to spend a few weeks in Ukraine be a good strategy to improve my dating market value? I don't know if you're trolling. Go Away, but I don't think it's a good idea to get to Ukraine. As far as dating value, what do you want to brag about having been to Ukraine? I mean, there's so much better to brag about. Oh, there was another super chat before. So his other super chat was saying, I was at a party recently and there was a guy there that had just got back from Ukraine. He'd been working as a journalist. Didn't have any real discussion with him because I didn't want to reveal my power level at this party. But one thing I noticed was that all the girls at the party were enthralled by his stories of wartime Ukraine and were all over this guy. My question is, would finding a way to spend a few weeks in Ukraine be a good strategy to improve my dating market value? And my answer is still the same. I wouldn't do this at all. There are so much more intelligent ways to increase your dating market value. Also, ask yourself, what kind of girl would you attract? You would attract a pro-system girl who's so pro-system that she's She's like full blue. I mean, she's going to be vaccinated. That we know from this survey. And, you know, if she's attracted by journalists in the current context, you're going to end up with an aggressive leftist. I mean, so I wouldn't do this at all. I would do the contrary. I mean, if anything, go to Russia. It might reduce your success on the dating market in the West, but at least once you've went into Russia, you're going to push away the undesirable partners, and if you find one, then it's going to be the right one. So no, very bad idea, and also dangerous. You would expose yourself to danger. Sprocket says, you said that sanctions have been maxed out too soon. So now the West can't sanction Putin anymore because they played their hand too quick, right? Yeah, I would say this. And today Germany came out and said they cannot deprive themselves of Russian oil. And so then what's left? If Germany cannot do this, what's left? They cannot stop Nord Stream. They cannot deal without it. I mean, they might do it if a nuclear attack is made on a civilian city, but there's nothing else that Putin should be afraid of. And so Putin has a very interesting space of action, because this is something I didn't know, but 60 days before the war began, something like this, Putin and other nations, Russia and other nations, signed a treaty, and this included the US, I believe, that was saying that we commit to reduce the prospect of a nuclear war. We commit to go on into the future without using the nuclear option, except in extreme circumstances. It wasn't binding in any way, but it was just a testament of, we don't want nuclear war. And I think it makes sense that Russia would want this signed just before that war, because it creates a space of action where basically Biden has said NATO will not send people into Ukraine. So Vladimir Putin has a full space of action, which is you can bombard as much as you want Ukraine, as long as you stay in Ukraine and you don't use biological, chemical weapon or nuclear weapon. So think about it, and in a certain way, it is a quite stable place to be for Vladimir Putin, knowing that he's not going to be attacked by the US on his Eastern Front. Knowing that basically all he has to do is use big bombs if he wants, but not nuclear ones. And it's almost autistic, like the specificness of this, because the fact is there are some bombs that are more destructive than the smallest tactical nukes. I mean, there are basically bullets that are made with the nuclear processes in there to create small explosions. So definitely you can just create as much destruction with a non-nuclear weapon. So what does Vladimir Putin has to lose? He can escalate this conflict as much as he wants. He can just make more bombs and just make sure that they're not nuclear. So yes, I do believe that this is a correct representation of the state of mind of Vladimir Putin, which is there's nothing more to fear. NATO will not do anything else than just guard Harcher and Archer the border of Poland. But what does he have to care about? Puzim says, JF, what do you think is more bonding, temperament or opinions? Not sure what you're asking here. What is the most bonding in a couple? Personally, I don't care that much about opinions. However, opinions, if they are opinions of leftism in a woman, they will indicate eventually her likelihood of leaving you. So that's one thing to check. But I don't think that political opinions are a way to bond. I believe that the way to bond is perhaps what you would call temperament, but it's in the everyday life, and it's in the link between the two people. It's not in what they believe politically. All right, we have someone in the waiting room. Let us talk with Bird Dude. Hello, Bird Dude. How are you doing?
Hi, JF. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great.
Good to see that we get to have a couple of slow news days.
Yes.
In this current environment, it's really nice to. But at the same time, you know, we had so much fun last time. I want more people to call in and, you know,
yes,
talk about
it was whatever. Fun. So you called last time, right? Did we talk about your dating life?
Yeah. I wasn't going to talk about that this time, though.
Were you? Okay. But which one were you? Were you the guy who has an Asian girlfriend?
No. That was his name is Dog something.
Okay.
I was the guy who likes curvy ladies.
Ah, okay. You were so picky that you rejected beautiful thin ladies. I remember now.
Yes. But to change gears. And it just occurred to me, because finally, like, I live in Canada as well. I think you still live in Canada.
Yeah.
It's finally spring, and I'm wondering about your garden. Have you planted any seedlings yet?
I've not planted yet because I have to plant more in April, but I will be planting in April. I have all of my seeds that I've stored myself, kept myself. So I can't wait to see a kind of, this is my third generation, third year of seed saving. So I hope that I will start seeing some evolutionary effect where my selection of the strongest fruits will lead to even more fruit and stronger fruits in the future. But yeah, I haven't started yet because it's too cold still. And I do it inside, but I do it in a room that relatively is influenced by because it's not heated directly, it's just heated indirectly. And as a consequence, it's taking pretty much in between the inside and outside temperature. So if I was to start right now, it would freeze during the night.
Yeah, the general rule is to only plant after what they call the last frost.
Yes.
So I guess you have your farmer's almanac ready and you have the date.
Yes, I mean, it's not the almanac, it's that I've been seeing it. I've been seeing what it is year after year, and I tend to plant in June.
June?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very northern.
Okay. Have you started any seedlings inside this year?
No, the seedlings, I start them in April. So April seedlings and then June planting.
Okay, so since it's June planting, yeah. I was going to say, because I'm in southern Ontario, and it's obviously not the North Pole, but winters are a lot harsher than a lot of places. So the growing season is short. So, you know, before then, you know, people always comment when they come over, you know, the whole floor space, because I'm just in an apartment, is full of like lights and seedlings all over the place every March, every February. So.
Yeah, I have 8 LED farm lights, so I have enough to cover four big shelves, and that's where I do my seedlings. I tend to do about 300 pots, and then I have some herbs that are just seeded in large pots.
Have you considered fully indoor gardening?
Well, it's not worth it. It's never worth it because, well, I mean, unless you have a plant that really doesn't need much sun, if you are talking about artificial lighting, it's not worth the value of the vegetable at the end.
You're right. You don't use electric heating then. It would probably just... Because the energy from the light would just become heat and it would be no extra cost.
Well, that depends because, for example, I use exclusively LED technology, so they don't heat very much. They don't heat basically at all. So if you were to use a heating lamp, the problem is it's costing even more in energy.
I remember a long time ago, like several years ago, somebody on the chat brought up the possibility of aquaponics, and you said, you know, if there was actually something to it that was that efficient, you know, it would be adopted commercially, you know, kind of large scale.
Yeah.
And I've been kind of thinking about that because even though I just have an apartment, I have been doing some little experiments here and there with like a fish tank with some plants growing in it.
Okay.
On top of it. Just as simple as that. And it got me to thinking, I would say the reason why, and it's obvious for a lot of things, why aquaponics isn't like a huge commercial success is because, well, at least so far, fertilizer has been very cheap, and monoculture with diesel-powered tractors just completely kills the market for anything else. But if you're thinking of like self-sustaining, the inputs could be just crappy fish food, and the outputs are something much more nutritious. It's just something to think about.
Well, yeah, but even taking that into account, are you not multiplying your expenses by orders of magnitude compared to just having chicken?
That's true. It's more a question of it's a closed system. Like it's everything the plants need, as opposed to you could take the chicken, excrement and, you know, make it manure.
I mean, yeah, that's what people do. And I'm sure that it has more nutrients than the diluted aquarium in which your salmons are living or whatever fish you're using in aquaponics.
I never really...
Because what do you care that it's a closed system or not super closed or imperfectly closed? In the end, what you're telling me is that having fish shitting in the water and having their shit diluted by a factor of 10 million in volume is somehow a genius scientific idea that will allow me to produce so much better fruits. I don't believe that. I believe that chicken shit is a 10 million times more concentrated of what the plants need. And it's like 10 million times cheaper to have a chicken compared to having a whole pool system with connectors, with tubes, with whatever crap they're doing.
I can understand what you're saying, yeah. And I don't have a commercial setup. This is like more of a down the line something I try. But
yeah, and experimentally, I'm not laughing at you or mocking your attempt. I think there is some knowledge to be developed, and it's interesting. But I don't see how it can work just physically. Think of it like Thunderfoot. What would Thunderfoot do? Think of it mathematically. You are telling me that hosting a whole pool that dilutes all of your nutrients is somehow going to work, going to be better. And all of this for what? For avoiding to have chicken, and the whole idea being that what comes out of the fish is good for the plants, but what comes out of the chicken is good for the plants, and it's not diluted by a factor.
I'm not 100% certain if the properly rotted chicken manure is like a 100% nutrient solution to
I
the,
mean it's whatever the fish shit is probably not 100% either. I mean, is there any reason to believe that the fish has something magical that the chicken doesn't have?
It could be a very complex question in terms of what it biosynthesizes, what it turns into. I don't know, like I'm saying.
And then I could justify this for, let's say you grow plants of pot that are worth $3,000 output. But how are you going to justify this for a plant of tomato that will output, if it's productive, $15 worth of tomato?
The only experience I've had with something like that is hydroponics. And the big hydroponics is absolutely amazing when it comes to growing basically anything, including fruit, in that you could do it anywhere. It saves a ton of water. And, well, most importantly, it's fast. It's really fast. It's really high yield. If you get like a nice dwarf variety of whatever it is. The big problem, and that's why I keep bringing up the fact that open system, closed system, is with hydroponics, you're on the line for that fertilizer. You need hydroponic fertilizer, which is a complete nutrient. So it's not like the fertilizer you get at like,
yeah, you basically need earth in a liquid.
Yeah.
So you're supplementing your hydroponic system with fake earth. Basically a distillated earth that comes in liquid form. So at this point, why don't you plant the fucking plants in the earth?
It's just, they love it. They uptake it so readily. It's so bloody bioavailable. They just grow faster. And I have like just a few years experience proving it.
And then this fertilizer must cost enormous amounts of money. You just rented your farm to a fertilizer salesman. That's happening. You're getting cucked.
And that's the big problem. That's why I haven't done it in a long time, which is why aquaponics seems to solve that problem. And the only problem, I know what you're saying about putting it in the soil. And I'm not arguing for this like either way. I'm just saying potentially it might be something worth looking into just in terms of bioavailability. Like it might be very dilute, but for whatever reason, whatever it is that the fish are shitting, the plants really, really like it. And their root system goes like crazy.
Well, that day I will set up an aquarium where fish can go backward into a shit bowl that will eventually shit onto the earth. If fish shit is that precious, I will just pump it from an aquarium and put it in my soil.
Okay, fair enough. With with soil, and I only started looking into this fairly recently, there's a whole facet, say, Department of Agriculture that looks into soil science. And you're probably very familiar with it at this point, but you know, depending on, they split soil into three categories. And this is probably extremely fascinating for the audience, by the way. sandy, clay, and loam.
Yes.
And this is more of a problem with people who do farming on like a larger basis, on a larger scale, or like on their own land, like you would, for example. Because most people, especially living in the city, they would use like potting mix. So the question of like what their soil is, it doesn't matter. That having been said, depending on the soil quality, when you start thinking about, okay, my soil is really, really clay, I'm going to have to amend it to grow anything. Maybe I should consider a different medium to grow in. I don't know. With the soil, you have to worry about what they call the cation exchange capacity, you know, which is just a fancy word of saying like how available does it make minerals and other nutrients?
Yeah.
And you need like a really specific mix of soils, you know, on a larger basis. Otherwise, you're going to have to amend the soil or use a potting mix. So, you know.
Yes. I mean, you can buy bags of compost. And you can just build your soil progressively year after year. You add until it's satisfying. So then you invest into something that will stay there.
What I did learn also is that compost is an excellent soil amendment. Like the organic nature of compost works as kind of like a catch-all amendment. So if it's too sandy, if it's too clay, you can add compost, and that amends the soil on its own. But at the same time, compost has some nutritional component to it, but generally it's not enough. You still need fertilizer on top of the compost.
You do. But for example, I use fertilizer 2 times in the summer. So the plant get to full productivity at the end of the summer after a shot of fertilizer at the beginning and a short shot of fertilizer at the middle of the summer.
Using solid fertilizer?
Yes, I use, sometimes I use the liquid, well, diluted in liquid, you know, the just basic Miracle-Gro kind of stuff. Or I also like it comes in rocks and you just shake and feed kind of stuff, you know.
Maxi-Gro or
yes. Something.
That stuff is amazing. That's like really good.
Yeah, because it operates for weeks, it stays there and it dilutes progressively.
Okay. You only get to plant in June though. Your growing season must end like in 2 months or 3 months.
Yes. Well, I mean, things like the squashes, they can survive in September and you can get them very late. Potatoes also, you can get them very late. But yeah, in end of August, September is when to harvest most of the stuff.
Okay, I didn't think of that because in an apartment, you're generally not growing root vegetables, so.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah. So, I hope I got the conversation started. I don't want to take advantage of it. Glad to hear you got the garden all planned out. I look forward to seeing your seedlings next month.
Absolutely. I'll show pictures. Thank you for calling, Bird Dude.
Not a problem. Thanks so much for having me.
Bye-bye. All right, let's talk to Stephen Robinson. Hello, Stephen, are you there?
Hello, JF, let me just turn off this volume.
All right.
Hello, JF.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. All right. Just made a big dinner and we're talking about gardening. I brought out this bag of Bokashi Living, premium Bokashi brand. I bought this bag of bran that I use to sprinkle inside my compost, and it gets your compost reinvigorated. And I started my garden, getting all the weeds out, and started some seedlings. I'm going to grow vegetables and flowers this year, and fruits and raspberries. And yeah, got some time to go before I really get things in the ground. We still have a maybe chance of frost here until May 2-4. That's the weekend that we stop freezing for sure.
Are you making raspberry grafts?
This is last year. A neighbor, he said, or I don't know, he or she, they put on the community Facebook page, "Hey, I've got plants that I took out of my garden." So I grabbed 50 of them and I planted them last year for the first time.
Wow.
And so I got a couple little berries. I cut them all really short and I didn't build any trellis. So this year I'll build a trellis and I'll tie them up. And I kind of want to let the area expand and just grow more berries, because I realized I don't even like to eat vegetables that much.
It's quite impressive. My raspberry plant, I just planted one just to see how it would go. And it planted its own fruits just beside. So you see the area expands, because if you let the fruits on, they will reseed a new plant.
Oh, yeah. And there's several types of raspberries. One is much weedier than the other. One will really spread underground and pop up all over the place. Mm-hmm. And one is a little bit more tame that will stay kind of close to the plant. So I can't remember what the two names are called, but definitely if you notice that you get a plant pop up like 3 or 4 feet away, then you have the weedier variety and you'll notice that it will just show up all over the place, whereas the other one will only show up kind of much closer to the plant.
Wonderful.
Yeah. No, it's a good season. It's the energy's changed around it's gone from winter to spring. This desire to stay inside all the time and just be in front of the computer, it's not as strong, and now wanting to be outside and talking to the neighbors and being in the soil and digging and feeding the birds and just getting ready. That we're getting ready to go back to work for my business, so I'm doing marketing and getting people excited about calling me, and so I can go over to their house, and I'm a chimney sweep and I install wood stoves. So okay. It's been with all the snow this year, we had a lot of calls with people's chimneys ripping off because of the excessive snow.
Oh yeah.
And it's like I must have had like 40 calls.
I've been buying the long sticks that you can screw at the top of each other, so you can sweep the chimney up to the high part. So you have this, and you just go around and you offer that service.
Oh yeah, yeah. We can charge $200 to sweep someone's chimney.
Wow. And you can do this relatively quick, I guess.
Yeah, it's me and a partner, and so one person goes inside with a vacuum and they clean out the stove, and the other person puts up the ladder and jumps on top of the roof.
Oh yeah.
And if it's really fast and simple, we can make it happen in 15 minutes. If the customer's not there, if it's a chatty customer, you know, maybe it takes a half hour, 45 minutes, and it's
fucking some social bullshitting relationships.
I don't mind it. Sometimes it's annoying and sometimes it's great. It's totally often Canadian. We're dealing with old people, you know, it's like an old lady. She has no one in the house. You're the chimney sweep. They're excited to have someone come by. It's kind of, it can be okay.
I can see these people, like my neighbors that are that age, they will stop me at the mall and like they're going to kind of settle for a conversation, and I'll be oh, how is it going? Oh yeah, okay, bye, and then I just leave, and they're like totally shocked. They're like, this guy is
they're
impolite.
Like, let's go
they're
for so coffee. I got like I haven't talked to anyone in 2 weeks. I'm a real social kind of person. I go to the coffee shop every single day and talk to like five or six people and like talk about Vladimir Putin and Justin Trudeau with like all the old people. And it's like, I can't just be alone for too long. I don't even understand
how you guys make it in terms of like social people. How do you survive? Like there's only 24 hours in a day. You guys are spending all of your time just
oh yeah, I love it.
Where do you eat? How do you survive?
I
don't have time to chat like this.
It's how I grew up. I grew up in a really social community, hundreds of people in a kind of church kind of community, and we all went to the same high school and elementary school, and our parents were all friends, and we would all hang out on the weekends, and like my grandmother, she would have 20 people over for dinner every Friday when I was growing up. So it's like, it's just in my blood, you know. It's like what am I gonna say? It's like hot blooded. Like we like to argue, and it's passionate, and it can go sour sometimes. Like I don't even really talk to my mom or my sister because we've had too many hot blooded interactions over the years. But yeah, I always find new people to argue with.
What are the points of disagreement in these hot conversations? The vaccine?
Well, for sure. I mean, it's whatever the current thing is. But then, you know, it's always the like abortion, or is it like religion, or you get into the details of people argue about farming and like, oh, compost and manure and the fish bullshit and the chicken. It's like, well, actually, I think chicken's way better because you spread all the straw all over the place. So the straw absorbs all the shit and piss and that turns and it rots that into compost. So then you put that all over your garden and then it holds the water so that your soil doesn't dry out. Like the fish shit doesn't do any of that. But I also have been to like some major hydroponic like marijuana grow ops where they just grow it in the fish shit and water, and the plants do really good. And yeah, when the when the money's good and you get $3,000 a pound, then it's worth it. But now that Canada makes everything so illegal and the government wants to get involved, a pound of weed in BC is now going for $400. And it's the top of the line medical, like crazy weed that is going to get you stoned off your ass all day long. And everyone's losing their money because they've invested all this money over the years to have like a high technology system that's connected to their smartphone so they can adjust the CO2 in their room and they've like spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on these setups because they thought everything was just going to stay the same at high prices. And this last year or two, the bottom fell out of the weed market and there's just it's flooded. There's weed everywhere.
A lot is getting priced out, not just in the weed business, but the entire society. I look outside and all I see are unsustainable lifestyles. Like you have your big SUV. Are you kidding me? How much does it cost to just go to the grocery store? You're going to pay $40 of gas just to get there.
Oh, I know. I know. I've got to drive an hour just to get to work. And then I get in a truck and we drive 2 or 3 hours around the area doing chimney stuff.
Big trucks, you know, you'll have a hard time getting to your customers.
Oh, but also we live in the mountains, so some customers it's 4-wheel drive just to get there into their house.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And we spent $10,000 on gas last year.
Wow.
Like I think we'll spend 15 or 20 this year. So,
you
know, it's $200
to sell so many services. Are you popular? Yeah. Do you do a lot of customers per year?
Oh yeah, like in the busy season I can go to 10 or 12 houses in a day, and our busy season lasts for about 3 to 4 months. And then we do another season in the spring that goes for about 2 months and we'll go to about 5 or 8 houses in a day, and an installation can cost $1,000. So, you know, if I do one installation and 3 or 4 sweeps, we can have a $1,500 day split between 2 people in a truck. And then there's a lady who does the books sometimes and someone who helps out with the website. So, you know, it's how communities work. You know, you go out and you make money, but you have to spend money to make money, right?
Yeah. Which is something I'm really not good at. I'm really not an investor. You know, I still work with minimal material, and doing this show has still cost me just what it cost me when I bought my computer back in 2017 and my webcam. I don't like investing to make money. I don't like buying the big pickup so I can do some electrical work. That's really not my mindset.
Yeah.
When you do installations, do you deal with a lot of red tape, like inspectors of the local city or whatever?
Well, we are the inspector.
Ah, okay. You have the cards?
I can certify my work. Now, I have to still go. I have to follow the manufacturer's installation requirements. And there's a service called WET Incorporated, which is the Wood Energy Technology Association. And there's building codes and there's red tape, and it's more than I'd like to do. I'm happy to just go and inspect, go in and do some maintenance, and you know, maybe one day I'll be able to just do that, and my partner will be able to hire someone else and do the installations with someone. I mean, that's if we grow or whatever. Who knows? But it's I mean, we live in the mountains. There we're surrounded by trees. Probably at least 1/3 or 2 or more of the people in my area, and there's like 50,000 people in the area that we service, they're all burning wood. So, and it's a lot of old people, so it feels good to help people that can't do it themselves, you know. And it's dangerous to not do the work, so it has to be done.
Yeah, so you have these old chimneys that were made in brick, and sometimes they were at the very middle of the house, sometimes on the border of the house. But then you have the modern chimney, like a cylinder in steel, and it's all cylindrical, and it all comes out of the house, and it's just on the side of the house. I guess this is much easier to clean.
They're both easy to clean. And that's what we build. We build the steel ones. and we don't really build the masonry ones. That's all old stuff. And we can put a tube down. We can put a metal tube down it if it's not working properly, the brick one, or if it's broken, or
okay.
we can smash out the middle and do some upgrades. But it's dirty work, and you know, so I work 6 months of the year, and then I take 4 months, 5 months off, and I just chill and work in the garden and hang out and talk to people and, you know, just live a life out here in the mountains.
Very interesting. Is there a thing at the top of a chimney that keeps the wind from blowing the fire inside?
It depends on, like, they're the people that live right beside the lake. They can get a strong wind that comes right off the lake. And some of them will put a little visor, like a little piece of steel around.
Like, but a little most cap?
Everyone has a cap that's flat. And that's okay. More to keep the rain out in the springtime so things don't rust.
Okay.
When it's not being used. But if the chimney's being used all the time, you can take the cap right off, and whatever water comes in is just going to evaporate. And what's not even just the wind, you have pressure in your house. So depending on if you have like if you've got a two-story house and you've got a bathroom fan on upstairs, your chimney could actually be pulling air from the from outside in. Because your house is always trying to balance the pressure.
Yeah.
So sometimes people call me up and they say, "Hey, Steve, what's going on? My chimney's broken. I light the fire and there's smoke all over the house." Uh-huh. And I'm like, "Is there a bathroom fan on upstairs?" They're like, "Oh yeah." I'm like, "Go turn off the fucking fan and try again."
Wow.
They're like, "Okay, it works."
Wow.
So yeah. And it depends on where you build it too. Like if you have a two-level house and you build the chimney too low and you don't have it extending higher than the peak of the house, then you can also end up with pressure. So it isn't so much that like wind coming off the mountain is what's the problem, but it's just the negative pressure trying to balance the positive pressure in your house. So your chimney can sometimes pull in when you want it to push out.
I recently bought heat-activated fans that you can just deposit onto the wood stove, and they blow air. They kind of work electrically from the heat generated by the stove itself. Does that increase the performance of the stove?
So, you know, they look really nice. If they move a bit of air around, then that's a good thing. They don't do a huge service, but what they do is they can, once they let you know how hot your fire is. So you can be in the kitchen, say you started your fire a half hour ago, and instead of walking all the way over to your stove to like see how much heat is putting out, you can see that the fan is working. So the fan will only work when the stove is so hot. So it's kind of like a visual cue. And some stoves have like a catalytic converter in them. They're called Blaze Kings, and you need to open up a door and activate the catalytic converter, but only when it's at a certain temperature. So oftentimes these fans help people know when their stove is hot enough to activate their catalytic converter.
And what does this converter does?
So the converter, it burns the smoke. So what you end up doing is it's like a EPA, like a environmental stove. Like it's better for the environment because your stove doesn't put out so much smoke. It also helps the wood burn for longer. So without the catalytic converter, you might get 6 or 8 hours out of a load of wood. And with the catalytic converter, you might get 10 or 12 hours out of a load of wood.
Okay, and it works in the pipe or in the stove itself?
There's both, but the best is if it's in the stove.
Okay. I didn't know about this at all. So it completes the chemical reaction of burning that otherwise you get incomplete smoke just getting out of the stove when it could have given you a little more heat.
Exactly. If you're using it properly, you go outside, and when the catalyst is engaged and the stove is right hot, then you don't even see smoke coming out. It just looks like gas.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's great. There, and it's a company from Canada called Blaze King. And they've been making stoves for a long, long time. I mean, there's a lot of companies that make them, but Blaze King's kind of the famous one in BC.
And you can install them on an existing stove, or you have to have a stove that's made for this?
You need to have a stove that's made for it.
Okay.
And you know, people do all kinds of things to their stove. The only problem is that if you're working with a mortgage and you have a bank involved, they don't want you to modify the stove. But yeah, people who own their shit, they can do all kinds of stuff to their stove. They install water jackets, and they have tanks, and they preheat their water, and they can do whatever they want, and they can get really creative. But if you're working with the bank, they don't want you to touch the stove. They want you to just manufacturer only. If you do any modification, then it could void your insurance.
Oh yeah, so, sure.
And I do the like insurance stuff. Like I like to have friends that are cowboys, but I like to work for people who work with banks because they got money to spend.
Yes. They have this money created into their own bank account. Insurance companies are very tight on this. And John Drake says, I think JF is mentioning blowers, and they definitely distribute heat more efficiently. Yeah, that was my impression, because my two fans, they displace a lot of hair. And if I put my hand on the stove at a place where the fan is versus at a place where the fan is not, I see that the fan is successfully pushing a lot of heat because it feels colder. It feels less heat. So the heat gets distributed much more in the room. And I'm guessing pulls a little more heat from the stove itself.
I think it doesn't, not enough to make a difference. It's doing more than it's taking, for sure.
Well, it can't be taking anything, because the second law of thermodynamics, everything that it takes, it will output in heat, so which is what you want in the first place.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, all they're right. Great. The fans are awesome.
Well, Stephen, is that it for tonight? That was quite a speech on a specialist thing that I really like. I really love, because we're headed toward the point where going with a chainsaw in the forest might be the best and lowest cost options for many people next year.
And you know, there's always trees dying, so just take the dead trees. Don't take the green trees. You want to let your wood be really dry before you use it. So don't take a live tree, and dead trees are dying every day. So there's always one to find. And they usually just fall down close to the side of the road, and you just go and buck it up and put it in your car and walk away, and you're good.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Thank you for calling, Stephen.
All right. We see you next time.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, what a specialist, Stephen Robinson. New Nation sent a super chat. Let us have a look. He sent it through Pastebin so that he could express all of his ideas. Thank you so much for the $10. He says, hey, Jeff, your show on TEDK was some of your best content ever, especially your personal remarks on the social world being painful for intelligent people. On your TEDK stream, you pondered the question, does TEDK's hardline stance mean all technology should be rejected because it leads somewhere bad? And the answer is yes. TEDK traces how accepting what initially seems as optional medicine and motorized transport, eventually becoming mandated by bureaucrats for everyone in society in order for each individual to remain competitive. He then traces how genetic modifications would also become mandatory because of the perceived inhumanity of denying cures for ailments in children, and how that eventually leads to an AI controlling the genes of humans, ultimately turning humanity into a manufactured product. He even describes how humanity giving control to machines would eventually lead to humans becoming less intelligent, because the system does not require autonomous humans to the point where taking control back from the machines would be suicide. i.e. similar to what you outline in TRP, without your theory of life's emergence or taxonomy of genetic layers. TLDR. In Ted's case view, yes, even accepting medicine or motorcycle literally leads to TRP. For example, some excerpts, the bad parts of technology cannot be separated from the good parts. Electricity, indoor plumbing, rapid long-distance communications, how could one argue against any of these things? All these technical advances taken together have created a world in which the average man's fate is no longer in his own hands or in the hands of his neighbors and friends, but in those of politicians, corporation executives, and remote anonymous technicians and bureaucrats whom he, as an individual, has no power to influence. Take genetic engineering, for example. Few people will resist the introduction of a genetic technique that eliminates a hereditary disease. It does no apparent harm and prevents much suffering. Yet a large number of genetic improvements taken together will make the human being into an engineered product rather than a free creation of chance or of God or whatever, depending on your religious beliefs. As society and the problems that face it become more and more complex, and as machines become more and more intelligent, people will let machines make more and more of their decisions for them, simply because machine-made decisions will bring better results than man-made ones. Eventually, a stage may be reached at which the decisions necessary to keep the system running will be so complex that humans will be incapable of making them intelligently. At that stage, the machines will be in effective control. People won't be able to just turn the machine off because they will be so dependent on them that turning them off would amount to suicide. Yes, I was aware that this is what Ted Kay stated. My questioning remains, though. You know, is it the problem? Is technology the problem here? In the fact that, yes, we are dependent on electricity. And yes, there's a bunch of bureaucrats controlling electricity. Or even look at what Steven was saying. He was saying there's some red tape involved. There's some inspecting, and the banks want a certain kind of oven, and they will not let you modify it, so you don't own the thing anymore. But to me, the problem here is not technology. The problem is human authority. If we could solve the problem of human authority, I would see us as a species engaging with technology freely, which is if you want electricity, you get electricity, but no one is going to come to force you to get a certain kind of electricity or to get a certain kind of technician doing the work at a hefty price. Because if you want to say, well, technology is the problem, then the problem with this is the slingshot is the problem, the bow and arrow is the problem. So you're going to give up your bow and arrow, you're going to give up the idea of floors, you're going to give up the idea of walls. It's untenable. We have already, as a species, evolved to become dependent of things that we were easily capable of producing. Perhaps some stuff in the modern world is to be rejected, and we shouldn't evolve to become dependent on it. But I don't see us returning to monk, as Goaway says, return to monk, yes. I don't see us actually returning to monkey status and giving up the idea, like basic stuff like clothes, walls, wheels. I still want these things. And does that make me a cock on the path to TRP? I'm not sure. That's what I'm questioning here. Whether is rejection is even lived by his own standard. I mean, Ted K was found in a cabin with walls, made with lumber. Sprocket is on entropy. He says, doesn't the same problem present when setting up a punishment system for criminal law If stealing $100 is 10 years in prison, $1,000 is 100 years in prison. $1,100 is death penalty, meaning we have maxed out our punishment potential. We've already played all of our card. Are we incentivizing a thief to steal only 1,100 instead of 1 trillion, since the punishment is identical? What keeps that thief from stealing only 1,100 and not $1 trillion? Well, I think that when we talk of sanctions on Russia, at least the people who are rooting for these sanctions, they are seeing them as deterrent. But I don't think that the role of the criminal system is to constitute, or that the main role is to constitute, a deterrent force. And so I'm not super worried about crimes being punished proportionally. To me, the role of the criminal system is eugenic. And so it's to keep people in prison so they don't reproduce for long enough. So to me, that's why I don't care that much about giving large punishment for small crimes, because I think it accomplishes the purpose of the system. We caught someone who was dishonest, we caught someone who was producing trouble in society, and we punish him evolutionarily. To me, whether stealing $1,000 or $1 trillion, there's not much of a difference. You're going to give birth to babies who are theft into the future. That's what matters. Fractal Man has sent a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, is there an inclination of females towards deception? I teach a college level course, and the vast majority of plagiarized material comes from female students. When confronted, the females are incredulous. Male plagiarists generally admit to it. Yes, I think that there's something, and Kurt Doolittle has been discussing some of this. I believe that men having evolved in the military culture to some extent, I mean, we weren't involved in war at every generation, but still, the history of Europe has plenty of wars, so we were regularly in our evolutionary history exposed to war. And given that we have won basically by forming teams of extreme honesty and extreme information sharing, I believe there was a pressure on male that wasn't present on females toward honesty, straight communication, and openness to acknowledging wrongs. And at the same time, I think that the punitive functions of society, including the justice system in modern times, but perhaps even older forms of it and religious forms of it, I think that they were applying stronger to males. We always hear of the witch hunt stories, and that's a thing. But I think that when people see a female commit a crime, they don't think as much, oh my god, I need to put her in jail so that I'm protected and that I protect the rest of society. I think there is this assumption, oh, okay, it's a female, she's not dangerous. Worst case scenario, she's going to feel bad about it. And in fact, she might let me fuck her if I catch her red-handed. So it's this sad evolutionary truth that the female, no matter what happens in her life, still has a uterus and still represents a potential chance of having a baby, which leads to so much tolerance on negative and criminal female behavior. So yes, I think you're totally right on target. Now, have they evolved towards deception? I think that if there is a force that is punitive toward males, let's say you're a male in the army, your general and your colleagues are expecting full communication of information because potentially you being dishonest or you being a free rider threatens the life of other men. So there is a kind of request of absolute honesty and statements under oath, basically, in a kind of military mode. If you're not exposed to that life, and if you're a female, and basically your evolutionary history is some men are going to fight between one another, and whoever wins, I will fuck. That probably opens the door to the evolution of deception, and for deception to be much less punished. Because what does it change? You can say the truth, you can say a lie, you still have a uterus, and I still want to have a baby. So that's the situation with females. So I think you're right. You're right. All right. Are we headed toward the conclusion of this show? Sprocket was saying, what should the punishment for rendering one infertile be relative to murder? Was the meteor strike that wiped out dinosaurs a eugenic or dysgenic event for the animal kingdom? And I won't read the other question, but I've already said my view about this. There is no such thing as dysgenic or eugenic. Everything is eugenic. It just may not be the eugenic direction that you want the world to go in. But everything is eugenic. There is no such thing as dysgeny in the theory of natural selection. Now, you can think that there is some things that are bad and you can call it dysgenics, but that's just your perspective. That's just your opinion, bro. And I will make this case to Edward Dutton on Saturday. John Drake says, JF, I recommend doing a show on Black Rock's algorithm called Aladdin. Interesting and scary stuff. Black Rock's algorithm called Aladdin. Aladdin has always been at the core of BlackRock. It was first built to manage BlackRock's business. AI called Aladdin is in control. Okay. Asset, liability, and debt and derivative investment network is an electronic system by BlackRock Solutions, the risk management division of the largest investment management corporation, BlackRock. In 2013, it handled about $11 trillion in assets, including BlackRock's $4.1 trillion assets, which was about 7% of the world's financial assets. We talk about the overtake of society by AI, but it seems that AI is the biggest player in the market right now already. Which side are you on? 7 people are theist. Oh my god, 3 people have no opinion. 1 person is an atheist. Have I lost all of my atheist fans? What is happening? In any case, I'll be debating this on Modern Day Debate on Friday. Grapes Coda sends a last question on entropy. He says, one of the biggest hurdles in dating for young couples is property allocation, which is only getting worse. Would group purchase of a derelict property be a solution? I don't even know what is a derelict property. In general, buying stuff with other people is not the solution. Derelict definition. Deserted by an owner or keeper, abandoned. So basically a super cheap property that you would buy. I mean, the thing is, you're a group purchase of a derelict property. Group? You want to buy this? How many people do you want in that group? No, I mean, definitely buying a cheap property is a thing. And it's a beautiful way to start in life. And you may get lucky, you may get extremely lucky, or you may not get lucky. So it may just not show up in the opportunities that are open to you. But if it's possible, it's definitely a good way to start in life. You should... you should consider it. And if you can do it at low cost without loans and stuff like this, definitely. But don't do it as a group. Just do it you or the couple, but no more than this. Grapes Coda says, JF, pooling wealth to then divide the property between two couples. That is something I don't like, because in collective deals of the kind, there is asymmetry, inevitably. This property will be somehow a little more useful to one of the couples than the other. One of the couple is somehow going to pollute the noise a little more than the other. So the concept that one couple has a property, that is very important to me. Now, if that's the only way you, and then there's the whole stories of social relationships and the girl goes to fuck the other guy, I don't like it. Now, if you're very young and it's the only way you can afford something, maybe it's better than a rent. But if you can't afford a derelict property, why don't you take a super cheap derelict, a super derelict property, so that you don't have to buy it as a group? That would be my best advice. And if you have parents who can contribute, if you can't do the full payment, there is certainly a way out, and communism is not the solution. Doubting Thomas has sent a super chat. He says, JF, it seems very disadvantageous for prey animals to have bright red blood, signaling to others that they are injured. Why haven't they evolved pigments or something else to mask their exposed blood? Probably because once blood is out, it's already over. Bye-bye. So because it's already over, you don't have an opportunity to evolve that kind of camouflage, because if there's blood already, you're likely going to die. You're already being pursued by a predator. You're probably, if the predator doesn't fully kill you, the bacteria will eventually kill you. So I think the idea is there was not enough of a situation there where surviving post the loss of blood was giving a wonderful evolutionary advantage. If you're pretty sure to die, then there's not going to be a feature evolving at that moment. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.